Hello everybody and welcome back to another spoiler review with me, Aboard a Prince. Today we're talking about Taker of Heads, which is an audio drama by Ian St. Martin. And what an audio drama. It's delicious, as you can probably see from the opening. So, let's get straight into it. We start off on the world of Postal, following a young tribal savage named Adonis and his mother, or as he refers to her, his matriarch. And they are on the track. They're on the trail, they're hunting down another tribesman from a different tribe, a man. They've been chasing him down for 3 days, and they're tracking him down to eat the fucker. So they let the guy think that he's giving them the slip, and they've sort of pulled back a bit, but now they're moving in for the kill. The guy has taken the opportunity to rest. He's paranoid as fuck, he's shifty, he's looking around, but he needs to rest. So he lights a fire, and that's what kills him. He stares into the fire to warm himself, to feel safe. And that's when they strike, because he's robbed himself of his eyesight. The mother comes in from the one side, and Adoni, the young lad, comes in from behind. They have a scuffle with him. They try and end him quickly, but not. And I love this. I love this moment. It says so much about the people of Postal and the chapter, by extension. He says, "We ended him quickly. He rammed a knife into his spine to separate the head. The brain from the body, but not to spoil the meat, you see. They wanted to end it quickly because obviously, and again, if you've ever gone hunting and stuff, you scare an animal, it gets its adrenaline up, it sours the meat, which I think is beautiful. But he also says, this was not out of mercy. this was not out of mercy. This was a concept I would learn later. And I love that, that's brilliant. So Postal's a hard place, and obviously it's had an influence on the chapter, which sits above in a space station called the Basilica Mortis, where he's going to be taken when a Thunderhawk gunship shows up and some Marines jump out, a chaplain, to capture him. And when he sees the Thunderhawk, his mother's terrified, but when he sees the Thunderhawk, just as they're about to eat as well, and he goes on about like how his stomach's rumbling because he wants the marrow from the bones, you know. They've just done a little ritual, offering thanks for the sacrifice of this guy, for this guy's life, who's going to be used now to extend their own. And they were going to gorge themselves on this kill. He doesn't understand what it is. He sees it as a dragon. It's the only thing he can comprehend of what it actually is, which is beautiful. Again, fantastic. So then we go to later on. This is after he survived the induction, of which he was only one of... there was only two of them who survived. And you've got to think, they probably took dozens of children from the planet. They were thrown into the incinerators if they failed. And these two survived. And they're now scouts. So they've had the surgery. Now they're being trained. Now they have a large discussion with him and his squad that is there, with the chaplain as well, about how to deal with the planet of Aslan, which has requested aid, and the Mortifactors have agreed to send aid to fight against the Tau. Now, the Tau are fighting a war with these people on this planet, in the jungles. So how do we defeat them? And it's kind of like a training exercise, an attempt to train these young scouts. They go through it more than they probably would normally, of what do we do? Do we just incinerate the planet? Well, no, because that's a waste, you know. And he's trying to hammer in these lessons of what it means to be a Space Marine as a defender of humanity. And I like that. It's good. And it's spoken like you would speak if you were speaking to formerly tribal savages who don't really... have only just sort of woken up to the realities of the world, and they aren't in that mindset anymore. But they are still a bit, but it's fading slowly, you know, their former lives. So what they end up doing is deploying to the surface, obviously, because you don't want to burn the entire world. When they get there, they meet the local sort of imperial garrison, and they're just getting, you know, they don't know how to fight the Tau. They're all through the jungles, and I'll talk about this afterwards, but there's some problems with that. But essentially, this is great. So don't get me wrong, I'm not being overly negative here. What happens, the first thing that made me go a bit, it's fine, don't get me wrong, it's perfectly fine. It's just, it seems out of character for the Tau, because what they do, Joker style, they capture an Imperial Guardsman and shove loads of explosives in his chest, sew him up and send him back to the Imperial base, where he blows up and kills a bunch of people, including medical staff. The Space Marines watch this and they're kind of like, ugh, it's a good idea. I would have done that. Now, for the Tau, That seems out of character. If it was orcs, they'd think that was hilarious and they'd do it. If it was chaos guys, they'd get a real kick out of that. They'd find it hilarious as well. Slaanesh guys would probably get a perverse laugh out of it. But, you know, like, it seems out of character for the Tau to be doing that. But it's not beyond the realm of possibility, I suppose. It just seems a bit out of character. Nice idea, but I don't think it fits with the Tau, you know? But then again, that might just be Tau propaganda affecting me, making me think that the blueberries understand such things as honour, which is a human concept. No Xenos race understands honour, and they all need to be purged from the universe, of course. So maybe I've just been propagandised too much. But anyway, that's what happens. The Imperial garrison unleashes hell into the forests. They smash a big chunk down. Space Marines are like, if I was them, I would have gone already. There's no chance. And the Space Marine Sergeant who's there is the only one wearing full plate armour. He's like, yeah, they've gone into that valley. Which, again, at that point, and it's the problem with 40k novels, which you have to sort of step away from and just let it happen. Just go with the sort of whatever excuse or don't think about it. Because he's like, well, okay, you didn't want to burn them all down. You didn't want to just bomb the planet because that would cause devastation. But you know exactly where these guys are. So why not just bomb the fuck out of this valley and then go in? But they don't do that, obviously, because then there's no story. So that's what they do. very much Apocalypse Now style. They jump into some Valkyries and fly through the jungle with a bunch of veteran soldiers to track these people down. Now, this is where we get to the point of for the scouts. In order to progress through the ranks, they have the normal sort of scouts system. You know, you have to train up, you have to get experience, and you have to ascend, and then you'll be placed into a reserve company, and then from the reserve company placed into the main battle companies. That's how Astartes work. Codex Astartes. And the Mortifactors, despite the fact that they're raised from cannibals, and they are Ultramarines, they're from Ultramarine stock. They're a second founding chapter, in fact, so their ancestors were part of, their founders were part of the Ultramarines Legion back in the day. So they've got that sort of heritage, that history. They're a long-standing chapter. They've adopted these tribal and ritualistic things from 10,000 years of drawing their recruits from this backward savage culture, which they orbit in a giant spaceship, in a giant space station, and they've never made any attempt to improve the lives of the people on this planet. They've just let them carry on being cannibalistic savages, ripping each other to pieces in a continuous cycle of violence, living hellish lives, hellish and short lives, which I think is beautiful. It's absolutely, it's delicious. It's delicious. So, that's where we stand with this. They're going into the jungle. Now, these scouts are going down in order to get to become a taker of heads, hence the name of the story. In order to get a name, because at the moment they're scouts, but they're nameless. They are actually called nameless. They have no names. They are not recognised by their fellow brother Marines until they take a head. And it's not just any old head. They have to do something of to show their prowess, that they've earned a name within the chapter. So it's not just about them surviving the trials, surviving the surgery of transformation, in, you know, the gene seed takes and they begin to change into a space marine fully. It's about proving themselves and in order to even have a name. So that's the kind of ritualistic thing that's going on here. And it's ritualistic because after that, they wear the skulls of whatever foe they've taken to prove this. And once they've got that, that proves, you know, that's the mark that they have. They've got a face now, you know, a war face. and that's what's going on here. So some of the scouts in the unit have got that. One of them's got like an Eldar prince. The sergeant himself. Now, this is a thing that's, there's obviously, there must be some kind of a wider sort of rules to this ritual of naming and skull taking, because the Mortifactors chapter themselves don't necessarily do that, but we have the sergeant here of the scouts, who again isn't in scout armour, he's in full on battle plate armour, but he also has a face mask on over his helmet of an orc war boss. But we get, it's basically said, but not really said, it's just sort of brushed over, but I get the impression that sometimes they wear the helmet, until they become full space marines, they wear the mask to prove that they've got names and they're worth having a name and worth being considered a brother and equal. But once they reach the battle companies, they'll either stop wearing it or, you know, just it gets damaged and fucked up through battle and stuff and they'd have other replacing it. Or maybe they do replace it with fresh enemies and continue that on. I think it might just be down to personal preference because every other sort of artistic example and stuff we've got of them, they don't normally do that, but that might just be an oversight and this might be a retcon of their lore. Who knows? Who knows? I think it's muddled enough that it doesn't really matter, but at least when it comes to the scouts and how they become Astartes, it's a fundamental part of that. So they go into the jungle, and again, this is sort of like learning for these scouts, these novices. The humans go with them, they volunteer themselves. The Space Marines are like, what the fuck? But they take the ride, they take the lift. And they're kind of just going to use them as, and they say, you know, these humans, as long as they're here, they're a hindrance, but they're a resource to be used. Which they do become that. The Tau have laid traps everywhere, because we find out later they've got crew with them as well who are adept at this kind of warfare, you know. Guerrilla tactic and stuff. So it's a case of them running into traps, losing soldiers. One of them falls on he falls into a spike trap. I forgot what it's called now. You know, a bamboo trap. And his legs all fucked up. And the Space Marines are like, nah, leave him. And they do. You know, like the humans aren't happy about this. But the Space Marines just like, no, we leave them. That's what the point of these traps are. to set us up for an ambush. But they get ambushed anyway. So a firefight ensues. They lose a couple of guys. Well, most of the guys, in fact, only two of them are left in this large battle. Our man Adonis, he kills a number of Prutes. We have them fighting against the Tau. Now, I think he's gone for a sort of Predator vibe, and I think that's why there might be a bit of a disconnect, for instance, with the... it seems out of character how the Tau are fighting, but he wants to go for the Predator thing, and the Tau are one of the only races, or well-known races... well-known things that has like cloaking devices and stuff like that. So they're obviously hidden in the forests, like the cloaked things hidden in the forest with red eye lenses and stuff. That's the thing he's gone for. That's fine. But I think if you could have taken any other foe, and that would have fit more, that would have fit better with the filling a guy up with explosives, Joker style, and sending him back to his mates to blow up. You know, there seems to be a bit of a mismatch here. But it's fine anyway. It's fine. It works. So it's fine. It just seems out of character. They have this scrap anyway. They sort of fight off the Tau, kind of. Most of the humans are dead. And there's just the two scouts remaining. This one more experienced scout who's almost sort of achieved entrance to the four battle companies. And our guy Adonis with his shotgun and his combat knife. So, what happens after that is they go tracking down the leader of this, who's some kind of sniper. Some Tau sniper. So, obviously, he's got like a handheld railgun, that sort of thing. now, they go after him. It doesn't go well. The other guy dies. And then it turns into... and the rest of the humans are dead. Adonis is on his own. And he decides, again, Predator's... massively inspired by Predator. You know the Indian guy in Predator who just stands on the tree trunk and he takes off all his armor and he just decides to face the Predator with his knife. That's kind of what this guy does, which is a bit different because this guy's a transhuman super soldier and it doesn't seem necessary. So he takes with him a fucking a homing beacon, doesn't activate it, pops that in his back, in his trousers, but then strips off all his armor, all his equipment, his weaponry, his shotgun, and just takes his combat blade, and he's like, I'm going to finish this hunt in the way of Pozol. Which is pretty fucking baller, to be fair. That's pretty fucking alpha. Unnecessary, but alpha. But I found, you know, most of my drunken nights out, most alpha moments are completely unnecessary. But, you know, when you're in that moment, you've got to do it. Anyway, so, we progress from there. He tracks down one of the wounded stealthers. I forgot what they're called, the Tau stealth guys. But I'll find that out. His suit's malfunctioning and he sneaks up on him. And he's in the water as this Tau guy's trying to get back to, you know, their base camp or whatever. he sneaks up on him and grabs him and pulls him into the water. Now, he's about to end him. And we see, from other conversations, from inner monologues that he's had and reminiscences about his life, we get that, you know, he would normally just end this fucker. But now he's got a bit of a taste of vengeance and he wants this fuck to suffer. So he takes a few more seconds to drown him rather than just end him immediately. And he takes satisfaction in the fact that he's hurt the Tau dramatically. So once he's done that, he goes after this sniper. How it works, how it ends with this like scene, and it's pretty good as well. He blinds him by destroying his drones and forcing the Tau to fight him sort of on an equal footing without his technology. And he runs around him. The Tau is just gunning into the trees. And he says things like, now the Tau robbed of his sight or something like that. He's, you know, he's just like any other prey creature. And I'm no longer prey. And that's the thing he says as well. The humans, and I like this, at the first engagement, the first ambush, the humans start firing wildly into the forests. And he's there and he goes, they have accepted the role of prey. Which I thought was beautiful. It was great. And that's his mentality, you know. He's got that postal mentality of a hunter. And that's what happens here. He runs around and eventually he takes out the Tau with his knife. He cuts the Tau's hand off with his knife. I mean, you got to imagine how big a Tau is. This dude wasn't in the battle suits. how big a Tau is against how big a Space Marine is, even without his armour. You know, you got this hulk of fucking flesh, of muscle, of ceramites, you know, running towards you because of the black carapace and stuff. Running towards you with a knife that's as big as a fucking sword, and he just hacks the guy's sword off. Afterwards, they have a discussion. He tries to talk to him, the Tau, and he's like, I do not need you to talk. I just need you to know that what's going to happen now. I'm going to cut your fucking head off and flinch your skull. And then I'm going to end up wearing it. And he says something like, the skull was a bit more fragile than a human skull. But basically it was the same to skin the flesh off it. Which is beautiful. So yeah, that's what he does. So once he's got this skull, he activates the homing beacon, travels back to the battle barge, and meets the chaplain. Now, before they went to this, there's another part of their chapter sort of creed there, how they prepare for battle. They go into a meditative trance-like state in order to get a vision of the Emperor. And this is done by them entering a fake cave. So to all intents and purposes, they are like being in a cave back on their homeworld. There's, you know, fires. There's no technology there. It's been, you know, it looks like a rock cave. They sit in there. They each give an offering of their blood. The chaplain then adds some kind of, must be super strong narcotic to this mix. And it creates like, you know, a cloud of drug, of blood. And they enter a trance-like state. Now, Adonis, before they went in, had a vision. And he saw all of the Battle Brothers there, except for the chaplain, within, sort of like shining in the light of the Emperor, whereas he himself was in darkness. And he thought, and he tells the chaplain this, and he's like, well, am I damned? This is ridiculous, you know? Because the Mortifactors have like a religious reverence for the Emperor. It's kind of like a sort of Valhalla thing. They go and stand beside the Emperor, you know, if they die in battle, that sort of thing. And the chaplain like, well, we shall see. And obviously when they die in battle, that sort of thing. And the chaplain like, well, we shall see. And obviously when he gets back there, the vision, and he discusses this with the chaplain, the vision was to show that he saw that every one of them would die in battle. They would all die in battle and ascend to stand with the Emperor, to be with the Emperor. Sorry, I just banged. Whereas he wouldn't. He would live and survive. And that's why he didn't have the light of the God Emperor on him. And I thought that was nice, you know. It was like poetry. It rhymed. So that's what happens. Now he asks to go back. He's saying, you know, every second I'm not in battle, away from the battle now, I feel like my edge is dimming. And the chaplain's like, Adonis, you know, you've got your face now. That'll be a great mask. That'll be your visage in war from now on. That Tau commander, that Tau leader's face, skull. But he says, you know, you just need to come to terms with the fact that there's always going to be another war. We're not going to go and deploy here now. We're done. And that seems a bit much. Like, I mean, it makes sense, really. If all they've got is a scout squad and most of the scouts are dead and all you've got is the chaplain and the one scout left. But at the same time, it's like, well, are they going to send anyone else to help? Because that doesn't seem like a fair trade. A couple of dozen crates and a Tau sniper, maybe the leader of that force, and one Taoist Alpha. That doesn't seem like a fair trade for like a whole squad of scouts. I mean, like in the grand scheme of things. And you're just going to leave? I don't know. I assume they might have sent aid to them later on and these guys just go off, you know, because they're under strength. But yeah, that's what they do. And that's the sort of lesson. It's more of him trying to tell him, there must be some other reason behind it, but for the scout's sake, he's saying, you know, there's always going to be another war. So don't get too committed to this war because there'll always be another one. And that's what they do then. They leave. And maybe that's because of the prophetic vision. The emperor wasn't telling them to stand and fight and stuff. It was more just this, that was the test. And now they go off to do something else because they're a very spiritual group. But yeah, I liked it. It added a lot of flesh to the Mortifactors chapter, their sort of internal culture. And it's nice to see how the... And this happens a fair bit, and you see it with different chapters, how the philosophy, the culture of the world they drew from directly influences. And it would, you know, inevitably, over the millennia, as much as they would try and fight it, it's going to have an effect on the culture of the Marines themselves, as that brings in with their own superstitions and so on. So it was a nice touch. It was really well made. It was really good. It was really well acted. The moments when he's having this internal monologue, there's some funny moments in there. And yeah, it's a quality audio and you definitely need it. Some people recommended it to me a few months ago when it first came out. And I was like, you know, audio dramas. I'm not normally too keen on the special effects, you know, like sounds of gunfire and stuff. But this was good. It wasn't over the top. It was exactly what was needed. It was quality. It was really good. I really, really enjoyed it and I cannot recommend it enough. Yeah, I'm going to do a lore video on them. It's got me intrigued by them. I remember reading stuff about them in the Armageddon one. And Captain Artemis, who was the first Death Watch character ever, first Death Watch Marine they ever created or released into sort of like the public, was a Mortifactor. So, yeah, that'd be nice. Although he didn't have red eyes, and he says that many of them have red eyes, which would make sense. It's like a genetic mutation on Postal. They have red eyes, I assume, to... It's an adaptation that's developed, you know, to live on a world that's completely dark. So, I don't know. Anyway, sorry about that. Had a knock at the door. yeah, fantastic work. Fantastic in every possible way. Highly recommend it. Great little story. And maybe we'll see this character again. I hope so. It'd be nice to see his him dealing with other situations. Because I think that's what it was. It was... This guy adapting from the mindset of a feral child into what he is becoming, and the sort of unique flavour it gets, again, the food, fuck the meat, from being a Mortifactor who's grew up from a cannibalistic feral world. Brilliant. Yeah, that's all I've got to say on this. Definitely recommend it. There's links below if you want to help me out and use them. And yeah, like the free audiobook you can get from Audible if you try that. Or follow the Amazon. You know, you'll see the links down below. If you want to help, use them. Otherwise, pick it up wherever you can. But yeah, I recommend it. You won't be disappointed. Anyway, see you next time. Thanks for watching. Cheers.